Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Swirl of Shadows by Andrea Penrose, narrated by Mary Sarah. Chapter 1. Wind lashed at her face, its dagger-sharp pain spasming through her flesh. The night was black as Hades, and as she hurtled down the steep descent at breakneck speed, buffeted and bounced by the nightmare fury of the bumps and jolts, the darkness was horribly disorienting. Terror gripped every fibre of her being. The noise, an unholy cacophony of clanging and whooshing, roared in her ears, resonating with unseen fire and ice, as if Hephaestus and all his legions of underworld blacksmiths were forging a special hell to trap her. Ariana, Lady Saybrook, awoke with a scream about to tear from her throat. She choked it down and lay very still in the velvety quiet of the room, willing her heart to stop pounding like a steel cudgel against her ribs. A bad dream. They were coming more often. She looked at her husband, praying her distress hadn't woken him again. A rush of guilt prickled through her limbs at the thought. I should be stronger than this, she told herself. And yet, Saybrook stirred and shifted, but to her relief, the glimmer of moon glow from the windows showed that his eyes were closed. His chiseled features softened in peaceful repose. For a long moment, Ariana stared at his face, framed by the unruly tangle of dark hair curling against the rumpled pillow, and then slipped free of the sheets and crept out of the bedchamber. She moved noiselessly over the night-chilled corridor floor and ducked into a study, quelling a shiver as she went to stand by the bank of diamond-paned glass, overlooking the back garden of their Berkeley Square townhouse. The last lushness of summer was already wilting. Colours were fading, leaves were falling, and soon the season's life would give way to autumn, and then the bare bones of winter. A prickling of goose flesh rose on her arms. Ariana chafed her palms over the light cotton of her night rail, trying to dispel the feeling of despair. Of late, it seemed wrapped around her like a shroud. Tightening, tightening. The heat of Saybrook's body suddenly tingled down her spine as he came up behind her and placed his hands on her hips.
Another nightmare.
Just thinking about the upcoming book, she lied. In trying to decide on which artist to choose for the illustrations, her long-time project of researching the culinary history of Theobroma Cacao, or chocolate, and editing the recipes and diaries of Saybrook's Spanish grandmother had recently attracted the attention of a prominent London bookseller who had made a proposal to publish it, complete with botanical engravings. The offer should have pleased her immensely. And yet she felt nothing but a niggling sense of malaise.
A big decision,
he murmured.
But both women are very talented. You can't go wrong.
Ariana nodded, not daring to look around and see the flicker of worry in his eyes. She hated what she was doing to him.
Come back to bed,
he said, pulling her closer and touching a kiss to the nape of her neck. Slipping free, she tucked a loose strand of hair behind her ear.
I will shortly. I'm just going to go downstairs and brew a cup of chocolate.
Chapter 2.
How is she?
After flashing a smile of thanks at the butler who had announced her, Sophia Kirtland entered the Earl's library later that morning and made herself at home in one of the leather armchairs by the hearth. A fire was lit, the red-gold coals crackling with a mellow cheer as the flames danced up from the grate.
Unchanged,
answered Saybrook. He put down his pen and leaned back from his desk.
I confess, I'm hard-pressed to know what to do next.
Sophia nodded in sympathy.
She had known the Earl for some years through their mutual scientific interests, and despite a fraught beginning, she and Ariana had become the closest of friends and partners in more than a few dangerous intrigues. Does Bars have no further suggestions? Basil Henning, a crusty former military surgeon who had served with Saybrook during the Peninsular War, was also part of their close-knit circle of friends, as was the Earl's great-aunt, Constantina, the Dowager Marchioness of Stirling.
His latest counsel is that time will heal.
A muscle twitched as Saybrook's jaw tightened.
And as he loathes platitudes even more than I do, it's a sign that he too is baffled.
It's as if the life has gone out of her, said Sophia softly. Saybrook bowed his head, wreathing his face in shadows.
Merciful heavens, forgive me. I didn't mean...
Sophia gave him an anguished look.
What a horribly insensitive thing to say.
He closed his eyes for an instant.
But no less true.
Ariana had suffered an unfortunate trauma in her youth that had apparently left her incapable of conceiving a child. But this past summer, much to the couple's surprised delight, she had found herself pregnant, only to suffer a miscarriage.
It's clear that she blames herself,
added Saybrook,
and ignores any suggestion to the contrary.
But Bars has explained that the mishap on the Montagna Russa in Paris could not have been the cause. Sophia hesitated. The mention of the elaborate wooden mountain, complete with wheeled sleds, that hurtled down a steep incline on rail tracks, caused both of them to draw in a troubled breath. A popular entertainment in the parks of Paris, brought to the city by the Russian soldiers of the Allied army just after their momentous victory over Napoleon at Waterloo. The so-called Russian mountain had been the scene of a terrible accident. In chasing a treasonous enemy, whose diabolical plot threatened to throw Britain into chaos, Ariana had found herself hurtling down the tracks on a sled, whose safety ropes had been cut. Certain death had loomed. But Lord Grantham, the shadowy head of state security, had managed to catch up and pull her to safety, though not without a tumbling fall. If it had, the miscarriage would have happened within the next few days. Sophia twisted at the fringe of her shawl. The fact that we had all been back in London nearly a fortnight means that wasn't to blame.
Emotion rarely listens to reason,
said Saybrook tightly.
We need to find a way to pull her back to her real self.
He pressed his hand to his brow.
But damned if I know how. We'll find a way,
replied Sophia, though her voice betrayed a quiver of uncertainty. For now she needs some fresh air and sunshine to bring the colour back to her face. She rose. Shall I go see if I can convince her to accompany me on a walk to the park?
I would be grateful if you could get her to leave the cave-like confines of her study,
he admitted.
She's drawn all the draperies, so it's dark as a crypt.
Leave it to me. Sophia rose. Perhaps, she mused, a martial frown narrowing her eyes. It's time we stopped handling her with kid-skin gloves. Saybrook looked surprised, and then thoughtful. Sophia didn't wait for a reply. She hurried from the room and headed up the stairs. The door to Ariana's study was closed. When a discreet knock brought no response, she rapped again. This time, a little louder. Still nothing.
Damnation,
she muttered under her breath. Then clicked the latch open and shouldered her way in. The room was dark, save for a single oil lamp lit on the work table. Ariana looked around from the pile of paper, her face ghostly pale in its glow.
I'm afraid I'm busy right now, began Ariana.
Ignoring her friend, Sophia marched to the windows and threw open the draperies.
Arianna winced and turned away from the sunlight.
No wonder you're withering on the vine, said Sophia. Living, breathing organisms need air and light and sustenance in order to thrive.
Thank you for the biology lesson, came the tot reply. May I now get back to my work?
No, you may not. Sophia cast a critical look at the silk wrapper covering Arianna's nightgown.
You are going to get dressed and come take a walk with me in the park.
Arianna squared her shoulders.
I don't feel up to it.
Then we shall stop in the kitchen for some cacao wafers, announced Sophia. I seem to recall you telling me that the Aztec warriors used them to fortify their strength for the long marches through the jungle to do battle.
Arianna looked about to say something, then seemed to think better of it. Sophia moved to the open doorway.
Maria, she called,
summoning Arianna's maid.
Kindly lay out a walking dress for me, lady, as well as the pelisse and shawl. The breeze is a trifle brisk this afternoon.
I didn't say I would.
Nonetheless,
Sophia returned and took her friend firmly by the arm.
You are coming with me.
Arianna maintained a stoic silence as they turned down Stanhope Street and passed through the gate into Hyde Park. A part of her was furious with Sophia for badgering her out of the quiet confines of her study. But as the grass-scented breeze tugged at the loose curls beneath her bonnet and a flutter of sunlight kissed her cheeks, she found her anger giving way to...
Admit it, Sophia ventured a sidelong glance at her. This was not a bad idea.
Arianna watched a falling leaf catch in the breeze and swirl up, a flutter of crimson against the cerulean blue sky. In answer, she released a pent-up sigh.
I know you all want me to be happy, but...
They continued walking along the footpath, their half-boots stirring puffs of pale dust.
But only you can decide when to cast off your grief and move on, murmured Sophia. You make it sound so simple, said Arianna, keeping her eye on the path.
In a sense, it is,
she bristled, resenting the implication that she enjoyed wallowing in self-pity, or rather, self-loathing.
Nobody seemed to understand the gut-wrenching sense of guilt she felt.
Come, said Sophia, let us walk along the Serpentine. I know how much you find solace in the sights and sounds of water. Granted, it's not the sea, with its splendid solitude and endless vistas.
And yet it is still an oasis of calm. Arianna allowed herself to be led toward the walkway skirting the man-made lake. This end of it, a section that stretched out in a straight line to a distant bridge, was known as the Long Water, and as they approached the stone embankment, sunlight broke the scudding clouds and danced in a diamond-bright glitter across the surface. Against her will, she felt a smile touch her lips.
I do not pretend to know the depth of your grief, began Sophia. But I do understand the anger, the pain, and yes, the guilt,
at having some terrifying force beyond your control overpower your body.
Arianna drew in a sharp breath.
It's not at all the same. You could not fight off the brute who attacked you.
Her throat tightened. To her dismay, her voice broke.
While you fear that you caused your own misfortune?
Yes. Arianna hesitated. She had not dared to voice her deepest fears aloud, especially to Saybrook.
And it's made me dislike who I am.
Sophia caught hold of her hand and gave it a fierce squeeze.
That's the Blue Devil speaking, not you,
she said with a gentle smile as their fingers twined together. The touch of warmth, realized Arianna, seemed to melt a bit of the ice holding her heart in thrall.
I...
What I mean is, all the things I valued about myself, strength, toughness, an unwillingness to give in to fear.
That is called courage, interjected Sophia.
Or recklessness.
Ariana stopped abruptly and watched the breeze stir ripples in the water.
I didn't think twice about racing off to do something egregiously dangerous.
Because your loved ones and your country were in peril, replied Sophia. To have done otherwise would have been a betrayal of who you truly are.
But please hear me out, interrupted Sophia. I know there are no easy answers or explanations for your wrenching pain.
She took a deep breath.
I hated myself for not being able to fight off the man who assaulted me. I felt guilty and ashamed, as if it was somehow my fault. It was you who drew me out of the darkness by railing at me.
She smiled.
I can still hear you ringing a peal over my head about not blaming myself for things out of my control. As I said, it's different, began Ariana. It's not, insisted Sophia. Nature, or fate, or call it what you will, caused what happened to you, not any actions on your part. Bars has tried to explain that to you.
Bars is just trying to make me feel better.
Bollocks, muttered Sophia. He wouldn't lie to you. None of us would. Our close-knit friendships are rooted in honesty and trust.
Ariana knew in her heart that was true. Sophia's expression softened.
Might I also point out that you had no reason to suspect that you were with child, so it's unfair to blame yourself for being reckless? Ariana was reminded that she had once confided to Sophia the reason why she was sure she could never have a child. Perhaps, continued her friend, you could bring yourself to see a glimmer of hope through the blackness of your grief. You now know that you are wrong about the possibility of conceiving a child, and there is no reason to think that won't happen again. What if it doesn't? She whispered.
A fear that she still could not admit to anyone was that Saybrook now might have hope. And the thought of disappointing him was terrifying.
Ariana, the world is full of what-ifs, counseled Sophia. We would all go mad if we let such worries dominate us.
A pause.
Or we would curl up like a hedgehog and refuse to experience the joys of life because we are too afraid of the pain.
Again, she felt a frisson of resentment. Sophia was watching her. Sympathy pooled in her gaze.
All I ask is that you think about what I've said.
Ariana nodded, suddenly feeling exhausted.
I will. But now, if you don't mind, I should like to return to Berkeley Square.
Thank you for coming, Seabrook.
Lord Grantham handed a thick sheaf of documents to his adjutant and waved for the man to leave his office.
Please, have a seat.
The Earl settled into the chair facing the massive oak desk.
I take it this isn't a social visit.
Grantham was the Minister of State Security, which also meant that he was Britain's chief spymaster. At home and in the shadowy labyrinth of international intrigue and deception. He had recently escaped a cunning plot to engineer his downfall and brand him as a traitor, in no small part because of the efforts of Saybrook, Ariana, and Sophia, and because of their loyalty. They had all once been bitter adversaries, but circumstances had forced them to work together on a number of sensitive diplomatic missions. And to their surprise, a grudging mutual respect had developed, and then a real friendship, though none of them were completely comfortable admitting it.
correct,
replied the minister.
As you know, there is trouble brewing in Russia. No,
interrupted Saybrook. He flicked a mote of dust off his cup.
Absolutely not. You haven't heard the details yet. I don't need to hear them. Even if I wish to do so, it's impossible for me to contemplate leaving London right now.
Grantham took a moment to rearrange the pens on his blotter.
I take it the recovery has been more difficult than anticipated. Physically, she is healed. However,
Saybrook allowed his words to trail off. The minister's mouth thinned to a grim line as he turned his gaze to the oversized map of Europe that hung on the wall to his right.
I'm sorry,
he said softly.
You have nothing for which to apologize. You saved her life. None of you would have been at risk if you hadn't felt compelled to involve yourselves in my travails.
Saybrook allowed a low laugh.
How could we not rush to your rescue? The prospect of being able to needle you over the fact that we saved your arse was too good to resist.
Grantham repressed a smile.
So it would seem.
He rose and poured two glasses of brandy from the set of decanters on the side cabinet.
By the by, you look like hell,
he murmured as he passed one to the Earl.
Perhaps a change in scenery would do you both good.
Ha! Saybrook took a sip.
It's bloody freezing in St. Petersburg at this time of year. Not quite yet. But in any case, the heat of the chase always sends a frisson of fire through the blood.
The minister hesitated.
Have you considered that the challenge of beating evil at its own game may spark a flame in your wife that will dispel the shadows?
Flickers of gold skidded over the wall map as the Earl raised his glass to eye level and set the brandy to swirling. He sighed.
I suppose you're going to tell me the problem whether I like it or not.
The minister wasted no time in seizing the initiative.
Tsar Alexander has specifically asked for Lady Saybrook's help. A jeweled medallion has gone missing. Bloody hell. Surely the Tsar has enough minions at his beck and call to retrieve a stolen bauble,
muttered Saybrook.
Why is he asking for Ariana? Because it is not just any bauble,
explained Grantham.
You know how superstitions have a powerful hold on the Russian imagination. Well, legend has it that this particular medallion is a talisman, and that if it goes missing, the current dynasty will be cursed and soon lose the throne. Perhaps that's not a bad thing. Alexander is turning more reactionary and has become involved in mysticism. And his two brothers don't exactly inspire confidence as to being enlightened rulers. True,
agreed Grantham.
However, you must have a great many operatives who are capable of tracking down the medallion,
interrupted the Earl.
It would appear to be a straightforward task,
came the reply.
However, you know as well as I do that Russia is a world of Byzantine intrigue, entangled factions within factions. I have, in fact, dispatched an operative to deal with the situation. But given the fellow's lack of experience with the wolf-eat-wolf world of the Russian aristocracy, there's a chance that he may make a meal for the conspirators looking to topple Tsar Alexander. Then why the devil did you send him? Because the Tsar left me no choice.
Grantham steepled his fingers and touched the point to his chin.
It was either your wife,
a deliberate pause,
or someone closely connected to her.
Saybrook frowned.
I'm afraid I can't quite unravel the Machiavellian twists and turns of your devious mind. Think a little harder. I'm in no mood for mind games, Grantham,
snapped the Earl. He paused, suddenly aware of a chill slithering down his spine.
Surely you can't mean...
Grantham arched a brow.
Hell's teeth!
Saybrook added a more colourful curse under his breath.
Please tell me you didn't really send Ariana's half-brother to Russia.
Chapter 3 Ariana put down her pen, too unsettled to return to translating the cacao recipes of an 18th-century Spanish missionary that Saybrook's grandmother had copied into her journal. Turning to the window, she hadn't yet bothered to close the draperies that her friend had so ruthlessly thrown open. She watched the play of light on the autumn hues of the gardens. Change was part of life's elemental rhythms. Living things shriveled and died. New ones bloomed to take their place.
Much of what Sophia said makes sense, she whispered.
And yet she still couldn't muster the will to forgive herself. And even if she did, another fear was lurking at the back of her mind.
Maybe I've lost my nerve.
Her breath seemed to stick in her throat.
And won't ever get it back.
A light knock on the door drew her away from her brooding.
Come in, she called.
Saybrook entered and came to join her by the window.
Did you have a pleasant walk?
Yes, Ariana replied, feeling a stab of guilt at the pain she was causing him with her blue-deviled moods. She placed a hand on his arm.
I'm so sorry, Sandro. I know I should not be sunk in shadows.
He enfolded her in a hug.
My love, you have nothing, nothing about which to apologize.
The steady beat of his heart resonated through her body.
Rather, it is I who feel I've failed you. I should be able to make you smile again. And it pains me that I can't find a way to do so.
Ariana slipped her arms around his middle and held him tightly, as Sophia's words about honesty and trust echoed inside her head. Smiles don't come easily right now, but not because of you. I worry.
Worries often become less frightening when you share them,
he murmured after she didn't elaborate.
Courage.
Ariana took a moment to find the right words. I worry about disappointing you, now that expectations have changed. Saybrook took a moment to consider the statement.
Then allow me to dispel any misunderstandings that may be causing your worry.
Another pause.
You are the light of my life. And I love you. With all the breadth and depth of my heart.
He feathered a kiss to her brow.
If by expectations you mean the possibility that we might have a child in the future, that would indeed be an additional joy. But it has no bearing on the elemental connection between the two of us. You make my life complete.
Ariana felt tears welling up in her eyes as she lifted her gaze to meet his.
I love you,
she smiled, feeling the blackness imprisoning her spirits begin to recede. More than words can possibly express. He kissed her.
Now that the question of expectations has been settled, shall we ring for a pot of hot chocolate and a platter of your cacao pastries? Sophia is of the opinion that both of us are looking peaked and far too thin.
An excellent suggestion, murmured Ariana. There are very few ills in the world that the Obromo cacao cannot cure. Saybrook cleared his throat.
As to that, while you were out, I received a summons from Grantham. Go ahead and spit it out, said Ariana.
Once the refreshments arrived and the maid withdrew.
As you see,
My cup is now empty.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?